things I've been going over, like last week, I was talking about community 101, is that core values of the church is that the main theme of the core value of this church is love works. You know, if you can, you know, the Bible, I mean, Jesus says love God with everything, but also love your neighbor as who? Yourself. So love works. It's not an emotion. It's something you do. It's something that you're applying life. And it was, actually, we had a very interesting time on Friday. It was very receptive. There's so many people out. And there was a lady who came up from the 60s era. And, you know, she was, you know, part of the flower power and all the rest of it. And we got talking to her. And she'd been in Korea for 20 years. She was a professor. And she, I call it one of those God moments, a God incident. And we came across her, and we were just talking to her about clothing swap. And she was saying about how she was leaving. And she was saying that how she was from Connecticut, and how she used to go to a congregational church. She was a Christian. Was, because the unfortunate thing is that when she came to Korea, she got so disillusioned with the Christian church. And I was, you know, she was saying that, you know, the Koreans were saying, oh, you're not a Christian, you're going to hell because you're a congregationalist. I'm like, hey, listen, if you fly under this flag, you fly under the cross of Christ, and you got the power of God living in you, it doesn't matter if you're Presbyterian, Methodist, I don't care. As long as you are under that cross, under that banner. And of course, she got disillusioned. She became a Unitarian or something like that. And we just looked at her, and we just shared with her the love of God in a very practical way that I pray that when she goes back to North America, that she will actually she'll come back to Christ. And so today, part of the seven core values is, one of them is vision, seeing beyond the present. The next one we'll be going into is stewardship, faith, servanthood, and I've left the best two to last, integrity and compassion. Okay? So vision today is being able to see beyond the present. Okay, everybody say vision. Seeing beyond the present. When you think about people like Henry Ford, I mean, you could only buy his car and you could only buy it any color as long as it was black. And he stayed with the same model for so many years. And his company was going to go broke until one of his sons had a vision that was saying, listen, we need to upgrade and we need to update and we need to really change. And you see, for example, the vision of the car is no longer run by steam power or some small engine or something like that. You got cars now that are like 1,000 brake horsepower. You got cars that are astronomically crazy money. And you could, yeah, I mean, so the vision of the car is no longer what it was. And so, like, the vision of the church is being able to see beyond the present. You know, you may see, oh, look at all these empty seats. Well, I'm looking at potential full seats. You may see it half empty, but I see it half full. So if that's what vision is, it's seeing the opposite of what you see. Being able to see beyond the bigger picture, or seeing the bigger picture. My verse for today is Proverbs 29:18, which is well known to many people. And it says, where there is no prophetic vision, the people cast off restraint, but blessed is he who keeps the law. Now, in the English Standard Version, where it says the people cast off restraint, it says the people are discouraged. Listen, where there is no vision in a church, where there is no vision even in a secular workplace, where there is no vision anywhere, people get discouraged. We have, for example, we have Hope for Korea, and which is with Teen Challenge. And basically, that ministry is being able to cast a vision to the people to help people who have no vision. It says we're meant to be a light in the darkness. We're meant to be sight to those who are blind. And so going out into helping the impoverished, being able to help single moms, one of the reasons why we're going down to the Women of Hope Center in Pohang is because there's a lot of women there who, you know, the families say you've got to have an abortion, but they want to keep the baby. And actually there's one particular client at this place that was beaten by family members, kicked in the abdomen and everything. I think she just recently had the baby, did she? I can't remember now. One of them did. One of them gave birth to their child. And so one of the things that we want to do here at this church is to be able, as well as the Ministry of Teen Challenge, is to partnering with this ministry that we go down to, and instead of them living in that environment, is to take them out of there and put them somewhere where they can be safe, where they can, they themselves can grow, and their child can have safety. You know, Korea is a beautiful country, but it's got some ugly spots. You know, anywhere in the world has ugly spots, but we're called to be a light in the darkness. We're called to be the transformers, so to speak. We're meant to implement change. You know, we're the agents of change. In the contemporary English version, it says, without guidance from God, law and order disappear. But God blesses everyone who obeys his law. You see, when people, for example, when there is a corporate vision, people will follow that corporate vision. However, if somebody doesn't follow that vision, they, oh, I'm going to go this way. Oh, I'm going to go that way. I'm going to go. That's because you have no law and order in your life. You don't want to have order. Now, I understand that people do have vision, but let's work together. When you work together, you make a bigger impact, and it becomes a harder bond to break. And when you're by yourself, when you're an island to yourself, and that tidal wave comes, what's left is devastation. So as we work together in building the body, we make a bigger impact and having a greater influence and so on and so forth. Chuck Swindoll, he said, when I think of vision, I have in mind the ability to see above and beyond the majority. It's being able to see what no one else sees. It's being able, I mean, for example, when I first came here over 7 years ago, and I told people about the fact is that we need to reach out to the prostitutes. We need to reach out to the street, like the homeless young people. There are homeless young people here, not just homeless old people, but there's homeless young people too. There are young people that are being raised by their grandparents. I know I kind of fostered 10 of them. I used to feed them kimchi jjigae every week. Absolutely loved it. And these are the things I did, and I still do, and I'm still in touch with them. But getting people to see what you see is the hardest thing. And so what I want today is for you to see not what I see, but what God sees for this church, what God sees for your future. Sometimes we're only thinking of the now. God says, well, I'm a God of here and now, yes, but I'm also a God who's down there. How many of you have ever heard of Helen Keller? Helen Keller. Good. She said, the most pathetic person in the world is someone who has sight but no vision. And this is coming from someone that was born at the age of 19 months. She had scarlet fever, and she was rendered deaf and blind by she was 19 months, sorry. And she learned to read in several different languages, Braille, and even speak eventually. And she graduated with honors from Radcliffe College in 1904, and where as a student she wrote The Story of My Life. And she authored 13 books, wrote countless articles, devoted her life to social reform. And her story is an interesting story, because somebody was willing to come alongside her and influence her. And I don't know how, but somehow or another, she was connected to Alexander Graham Bell. How many of you know who he is? Telephone and all that great stuff. And she was 7 years old, and her life was about to be transformed by a woman who was to come become her teacher. Her name was Anne Sullivan. And she says that the most important day I remember in all my life, because Sullivan herself had once been blind, and she had a series of operations that helped her to get back her sight. Keller writes that the teacher had led her to a stream and had repeatedly spelled out the letters water on one of her hands while pouring water over the other. And the method proved to be a revelation. Helen Keller writes, the living world awakened my soul, gave it light, hope, joy, and set free. There were barriers still, it is true, but barriers that could be in time swept away. And that's what vision does. It sweeps away the blindness. It sweeps away what sometimes we refuse to see, or it helps us take away the blinkers. But it's very true when she says the most pathetic person in the world is someone who has sight but no vision. When I walked into this church, this was never like this. It was never like this. And I remember just seeing how it should be. And I was just thinking, well, God, what about your people? Your people need a vision, because without a vision, the people perish. There's no hope. There's discouragement. There's all these things. And so reaching out, raising up, sending out. It's easy to reach out. The hardest part is then raising somebody up. And then the easiest part is sending them out. This is what Jesus did with the disciples. He reached out to them. And he raised them up. He put up with their tantrums. He put up with their little spoiling moments. But then at the end of the day, he sent them out. And that should be the given vision of everyone's life. So we've got to ask ourselves a very simple question. What is vision? Now, vision is seeing in our mind or spirit something that can happen in the future. That's where there is no revelation, where there is no prophetic vision, the people perish. The people give in to lawlessness. The law and order just falls apart. And it's important that you understand this is what vision is. You may think, well, why am I here in Korea for? Well, ask God. There's a greater reason for you to be in Korea than just teaching. I've met teachers when I've actually spoken to them, and they're like, oh, man, I'm just here paying off my debt. I'm just here doing this. I'm here doing that. And I say to them, I just say, why don't you forget about that for the moment? Yes, that's essential, but look at the children you're investing in. They're the future of this country. Have a vision for them. And they sit there and they go, I never thought about that. I'm like, duh. It's as simple as that. And God gives Christians spiritual visions. Something God wants to do. Sometimes I've come across people who have visions of what they want to do. Now, there's a big difference between what God wants you to do, because what God wants you to do, it brings in together a community effort. But when it's something that you want to do, there's a, this is what I want to do. This is what I'm going to do. Follow me. And what you find is that it brings in dissension. It brings in a root, and it brings up a separation of what's going on. It's a little bit dark there, guys. If you could lighten it up somewhat. So it's important that the vision that you have, that God gives you, is something that is God. It is God-given. It is God-breathed. It is God-inspired. Because listen, when Emil and I met 3 years ago, during one of the worst typhoons that this country has ever had. And it's quite an actual interesting experience, because he's in one town. It's raining hard, right? We're in Gwanghwamun. It's raining really, really hard. We find these telephone booths, and there's about maybe, I think there's like 4 or 5 of them, right, Emil? And so we go in there, and we're like, we don't have no money, so we're going to talk to each other as though we're on the phone. So I'm looking at him, and he's looking at me, and I'm like, hey, Emil, so tell me what's happening. And he's like, oh, and everybody's walking past when you use the phone, and I'm like, sorry, I'm on the phone. You know. And eventually, when the rain eased off, we managed to get back to the to the train station. But his vision that he had goes hand in hand with the vision that I have, which is for Teen Challenge Korea, which is not just for teenagers, but it's for broken people. It's for people who have life-controlling problems. It's for people who don't know the truth. It's people who want to be free. It's for people who want to no longer be at that level. I know, I've come from that. Tony's come from that. Many of us who have come from those backgrounds know what it's like to be free and see people be set free. Now, 3 years later, we started up Hope for Korea. And how long has it been going now? You put up the page, like, what, a week? Less than a week? 4 days and like over 356 likes, and people are really getting plugged in, which is awesome. That's what happens. When people have a vision, people are drawn into that. And God gives leaders and people, see, people just think it's leaders only. It's not. Leaders and people, spiritual vision to know what God wants to do, wants us to do in ministry. There's always a need. There's always a need. People have wants, yes, but there's always a need. And you don't need some divine visitation in order to have a vision to say, yeah, I think I can help make a difference here. I can help meet that need. For example, we are going to be doing an English camp here at the church, and a bunch of us are going to be involved in teaching young people. And during that time, we want to be able to leave an influence in their lives, as well as when the parents come to influence in their lives. So the vision is not just for, oh, okay, let's get the kids in, get the money. No, but get the kids in and the parents in, and then being able to be an influence in the parents' lives. Because I've known so many Korean teenagers who just don't want to be at home anymore, or Korean children who don't want to be at home anymore because there's nothing for them at home. There's no family life. There's no love. The fathers are never there. And when they are there, they're drunk or they're sleeping or they're too tired. And then the weekend comes and it becomes a quick moment of quality time. So we want to be able to be the instruments of vision in their life. I've said this before to people, and I said, if they're not going to be the parents in their life, and I've said this in some pretty big churches, you know, to youth pastors and all, I said, if they are not going to be the spiritual influence in their life, you must be. You have to be the direct post. Think about the people in your own life that when you were a young person, that when your parents weren't around, that were older than you, that you can remember and go, yeah, that person spoke into my life. Oh, yeah, that. I can name you a few of my own. And sometimes, obviously, with vision comes as a burden. Now, when we think of burden, we think of something of negative, like, oh, man, this is heavy. Now, Jesus said, you know, anybody who, you know, picks up my yoke, my burden is what? Light, and my yoke is easy. Yeah, sometimes the burden that we get from God carries with it not just a sense of like responsibility, and that can be a bit heavy in itself, but that burden should carry with it a sense of passion, a sense of driving force, a sense that will compel you that you want to go out and make a difference, that it's beyond you, that it's something that you think, yes, I can do this. Because if it's just me and God, I know that we can do this. But then as a body, as we do it together as a body, we make a bigger impact. We have a greater sphere of influence. Some of us may work in finance. Some of us may work in schools. Some of us may work in whatever the case may be. That becomes your sphere of influence, because then you take a vision that God has given you and you're compelled by God alone to go out there and make that difference. Just to make that difference. You know, sometimes we look for the lightning and the thunder and everything else. Whereas the simple vision can be sitting down with that person right next to you and just having a cup of coffee. Just being that life force, so to speak. Just being that burden bearer. Being able to come alongside and lift somebody up. Being able to speak life into someone. Hope. Now the question is this, the next one is, why is vision important? Why is vision important? Well, of course, vision gives you what? Gives you direction. It gives us direction. I mean, if you close your eyes and I'm like, okay, let's walk, bang. What did Jesus say? The blind leads the blind and they shall both fall into a, what? Ditch. A ditch. You know, I've had the privilege, my mother used to work with mentally disabled and mentally handicapped people, and she was tremendous. She was very caring, and she is a very caring woman. I used to see her work with some of the blind people. And to see a blind person trying to do, especially if they have, they're mentally disabled, or they have those problems. For me as a child, I grew up to see that this person needs help. And I would always remember my mother coming alongside that person, just taking them by the hand and stroking them, and just being very motherly, just saying, it's okay. Where do you want to go? Usually, sometimes it was someone who had Down syndrome. I need to go to the bathroom. Okay, so she would take them to the bathroom and stuff like that, you know. And she would get other stuff. And she would follow. She would lead by example. There are people around you who may not have vision, but you could be the vision in their life for them. You can be that vision. You can be that direction. So vision gives us direction. If it gives you direction, people will follow that. Vision also, like I said, when it comes with a burden, gives us passion. People have said to me, they said, wow, you've been in Korea 7 years and they're like, and you still don't have a residential program yet? Haven't you felt like giving up recently? Yeah, I have. But to be quite honest with you, I can't give up. And they're like, well, why can't you give up? I said, because Jesus never gave up on me. He followed through. He went to the cross because he saw the end result. He saw it beyond the cross. He saw it beyond an empty tomb. And he's seated at the right hand of God. And one day he's going to come back. He endured. And for the sake of vision, sometimes we live in a day and age where we want it and we want it now. Whereas when you see, for example, in Habakkuk, though the vision tarries, it will come. Meaning, though the vision is slowly there, it's coming to pass. It will come to pass. But God has a way of doing things in order to build it, his church. Obviously, I've said vision gives us perseverance, which gives us the endurance to do what no man can do. When God calls you to do something, it is tiring. But that's when you go, when I am weak, then he is strong, for his grace is sufficient. Vision should inspire us, you and I, to grow. I put on my Facebook, leaders get it wrong. And the only way leaders improve is that they acknowledge that wrong and grow from it. And that's how you improve, and that's how you inspire. Vision gives hope. I was very fortunate that the Teen Challenge program that I went through many years ago, about a mile down the road after I graduated, there's a female center there, and it says Hope House. And the word hope was an acronym, H-O-P-E, helping one person escape. And that's what vision does. It helps one person escape because you show them the way. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. You show them. You become the guidepost. You become that signpost to them. The question is how do we get vision? Well, the Bible is full of dreams. It's full of visions. It says, I will pour out my spirit in the last days. And then he goes on and says, young men will dream dreams. All men will have visions, my maidservants, and so on. We get visions because we seek God for his will, his vision, and his direction. There's a lot of people out there who have a lot of, there's a lot of self-help books and all the rest of it. But when you go beyond the self, then it kind of makes that difference. We get God's vision when we seek God for his will, his vision, and his direction. You know? It's not about us. Well, it kind of is, but it's about him through us working together to make a greater impact as a body of believers. And realize sometimes that the vision comes in small pieces. Now, I remember when I had the vision for Teen Challenge Career, it was in like 2006, no, 2000, sorry. And then it was about, by 2006, we came to Korea. Now it's 2013 and things are starting to happen. But it is, I mean, the fact is that when you're in his will and you're in his vision and you're following his directions, yes, you've got to go through the valley of the shadow of death. Yes, you've got to go through the valley of decision. Yes, you've got to go through the valley of tears and the rest of it. But when you know he is with you, you know, if God be for me, then who can be against me? When God gives you a vision for your life, and when you partner into the vision of the church, and you partner into it, and you're following along that direction, it doesn't matter, come what may, life is not dictated to you by its circumstances, but by the choices you make, and how you want to overcome those circumstances. And when it comes to the vision that we get is that we never get this grandioso vision. We don't see, I mean, for the fact is that when we think of Picasso, when he did most of his paintings, or we think of the Sistine Chapel, wow. I mean, I've never seen it. I've known people who have seen it. But just to have that in your mind and try to convey it to the workers up there as you're painting this piece of art that's lasted hundreds and hundreds of years, that's what vision is. You don't see the full picture. You just see it bit by bit by bit. And then until you step back and then you look and you go, there it is. That's what vision is like. It usually comes in small pieces. And vision may come from different sources. The Bible. Other people. You may see something in somebody's life for example, whether it's homeless or the prostitutes or children or whatever the case may be, people in prison or people in other parts of the world, and you may get a burden, a vision, and that becomes a source to you. During times of prayer, you know, those little, what was that? What was that little image? You know, you have a vision for the kids who you work with, or you're someone that you have, or something that just struck a chord in your heart, and you're just going, God, what is this? What is this? Who is this? Teen Challenge is not just a residential program. It's a program where people get discipled spiritually, but then there's also they get vocational training, and they get educational training, and they get physical training too, so they can be restored to a life of discipline. Actually, I'm going to have to show you maybe next week what I used to look like. Where is it? You saw it, didn't you? I looked like a bum, right? Pretty much. I was a long-haired, I had a mullet and everything. I lost a lot of weight, I mean, with the drugs and everything. You know, my vision, I didn't have no vision. My vision was just death. But my grandmother, before she passed away, she never used to call me grandson. She always used to call me son. When my parents divorced, God gave her a vision for me to pray for me and not to give up, because she would see me back in his hands. I wanted to be a minister when I was 11 years old. I wanted to be a preacher. I mean, I wasn't seeing that at the time because I was angry. I was hurt. My parents divorced. Nobody loved me. Nobody cared. And so I got involved in things that young people shouldn't get involved in. And eventually, through the escalation, I come to a place where I came back to Christ. And it was in a tent meeting, actually, and it was a woman, Marilyn Harry, powerful woman of God. And I went through the program. I graduated. And I never forget that when my grandmother was on her, she was in hospital, she was on her deathbed, she looked at me. She said, son, you know where I'm going. Why are you hanging around? Go do it. I'm like looking at her and I'm going, because you're my grandmother. She says, I know. You don't have to wait for me. You know where I'm going. But I couldn't leave her. She's my hero. My mother's my hero too. Eventually, when she passed away, I found something that she had written that goes back to when my parents just divorced. And that's how I knew that God gave her a vision. You'll have a vision for someone, maybe it's a family member. You just got to keep on praying. You got to keep on believing, because they're not going to believe for you. Or they're not going to believe for themselves. But when it comes to the vision of the church, you got to ask yourself, well, how can I be involved? How can I do this? What gifts, what talents, what skills do I have that can make a difference? You got gifts and you got skills and you got talents that can make a difference. So you got to be willing to say, hey, you know what? I like the fact that when I first met Chloe, she's like, oh, man, I can help out in the media. I'm like, okay, Chloe, we'll see you next week. 2 months later, hey, Chloe, nice to see you again. Where have you been all my church life? And then I found out she lived all the way down there. I'm like, whoa. It's just having that, I never forget, remember, how many of you remember Candy and Mike? And Mike was a wonderful guy. He worked in the U.S. military. He was in pharmacy in the army. He had a stutter, but I could just wait there all day and just listen to him and just patiently wait. And his wife, Candy, man, you have A-type personalities, but she was like double A-type personality. She came in here. She says, okay, what can I do, Pastor? What can you do? Oh, I did Sunday school for children. Oh, okay. Where's the Sunday school room? Right there. Okay, see you later. I'm like, oh, yes, ma'am. I'm like, okay. But she did it. She did it. Can I do that? Yes, you can. There's people needed in media. There's people needed in the worship team. There are people needed in the children's, you know. There's people needed for Hope for Career and helping those in Yeongdeungpo when it comes to ministering to not just to the homeless, but to the prostitutes too. They're people. They cut them. They bleed the same color as you and I. They breathe the same air as you and I. Their vision is like that. We should be able to help them see beyond that. And vision may come or something in our everyday life. I remember when we had, for example, we had a big teen challenge prayer meeting here. And it just happened that there's a man who runs a company. He has an office in Japan. He has an office over here. But then I later to find out he's like the head elder of the Presbyterian Church. He oversees all the elders throughout South Korea. I didn't know that, but God knew. And I shared with him something, and it was about February time, and I was sharing about how sometimes, guys, I like to be random. And I go on the subway, and sometimes I'll just want to see Seoul, because Seoul is a really large city. And I'll get off at some random place. And I remember I was going up these stairs, and there was a young lady, I would like to say early 30s, late 20s. She was dirty. She was disheveled. She had nothing. It was freezing. And it was the time that the ice rain was coming down. And she had one of those little, like, yellow bowls. And I was watching people. They're going, Beck won. I'm thinking, I've got Manon. And it always happens when I'm going somewhere, and it's my coffee money. And I'm walking past, and I really felt the Lord. I'm like, oh, man, I wish I could help this young lady. I wish there was somehow I could put her somewhere where she could just get cleaned up. She could have freedom. She could have space. She could have learned. She could have education. Because some of these women don't have education. They drop out of school. And as I'm walking by, I'm thinking, well, how can I help her? I remember felt this impression. I felt like the Lord speaking to me, saying, give her your 10,000 won. I'm like, what? Get thee behind me. What? This is my coffee money. Are you kidding me? The guy said, no. Give it to her. You want to make a difference? Because actions speak louder than words, right? So I'm like, okay. And I kind of do my little thing. I kind of go, huh? And I walk off. So I put it in there, and I made sure it was folded. So it hit her on her hand, and I walked away. And she opens her eyes, and she looks, and she goes like that. And I kind of sprung over, and she goes, come send me down! I'm like, it's okay, no problem. And her face... It's amazing how one simple thing can make one big difference. Coffee money can make a difference in somebody else's life. It's amazing how she was not expecting that, but it made a difference in her life. I remember a young man by the name of Peter Cho. He had problems with pornography and different other things. He didn't have a vision for his life because he couldn't see beyond his own problem. But I helped him to see that. Now he's happily married. He's working. He's involved in ministry. He's playing the guitar. He's doing everything else. And he's doing really, really, you know, he's doing well. Being able to have that vision in, you know, something you see in everyday life. Okay, the next one is this. How do we develop vision in people? Well, simply this. You instruct them that God has a plan for their lives. And you go, really? Yeah. Jeremiah 29:11. For I know the thoughts that I have for you. Plans to give you a future and a hope. Plans not for destruction. Teach them the way God reveals his will for our lives. This, as a, you know, through the Bible, other people, times of prayer, something through, you know, through preaching, something in everyday life. Being able to give them examples from the Bible and today of God's direction in the lives of his people. I think of David Wilkerson. He was a country preacher in Pennsylvania. He's reading Time magazine. I can't remember which magazine it was now. But he was reading a magazine about how these young men had killed another young man in a gang-related murder in New York. And he decides to go to New York City. He's a country preacher. He has got no idea about New York City, but he goes there. Ends up on the front page of the news because he's holding up the Bible. He bursts into the courtroom. He's got a burden for these guys. But then not what many people don't know is that he left New York City very discouraged. His father had died a couple of years beforehand. And he was so discouraged. His grandfather comes along and he says to him, he says, David, maybe God has a greater reason for why it didn't happen the way you wanted it to happen. And so what does he do? Okay, he goes back to prayer and then he decides to go back to New York City. And here's a redemptive analogy. He goes back to an area where he knows there's a Hispanic church. And as he pulls up and gets out of the car, there's a kid there who recognizes him, the street kid. He says, "Hey, you're that preacher even the cops don't like." That from that moment on, he was able to connect with the rest of the gangs because, "Hey, you're the preacher not even the cops don't like." And that was in 1958. And 55 years later, Teen Challenge is in, over 86 countries of the world, and it's being developed in other countries of the world. Here, Japan, Cambodia, Indonesia, Vietnam, Thailand, China. You know, there's other countries that are taking it on as well. So that's what happened. Encourage people to ask God for his vision and goals for their lives. And there's personal vision, true. And then there's corporate vision. In Philippians 3, 12 through 14, Paul says this, "Not that I have already obtained this or am already perfect, but I press on to make it my own because Christ Jesus has made me his own." He wanted to get a hold of what God had for him in his life because Christ had taken a hold of him in his life. And so he takes a hold of him and he's like, whoa, I'm not already obtained this. I'm not perfect, but I'm taking a hold of that as he has taken a hold of me. I have got a burden. I have a passion. And he says, "Brothers and sisters, I do not consider that I have made it my own." Meaning, it's not my own. It's for everyone. "But one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind and straining forward to what lies ahead." That's the endurance. That's where the part of vision comes in, where you endure. That's where you persevere. It's where you press on. And you go on, and he says in verse 14, "I press on toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus." I press on. Go back. "I do not consider that I've made it my own, but one thing I do. I press on." When it comes to the vision of what we have here at the church, there is a corporate part of it that you have an important part to play in the tapestry of God's design. You may be a single thread, you may be a double thread. Irrespective, you're a part of his plan. And plus, he has that for your own life too. Do you know what God's vision is for your life? Do you? Are you secure in that knowledge, knowing that as he has got a hold of you, have you got a hold of him? As I close, here's the question. Where can you start today in growing vision in your life? Let's take a moment to pray.